a Conti, bella palla per Rebic, Rebic Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro, gol!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher, joined once again by Madison.
Hey, exciting, kind of weird week we had in terms of Italian soccer, but yeah, happy to be here.
Yeah, we've got Stefano. Jan missing this week and also AJ, who is basically completing his move to not West Virginia. He was eager to correct us on that. He's just moving to normal Virginia. So he's all settled in there now almost and we'll be back next week. And Jan is also missing this week, but as I said, we'll hopefully be back next week also. But we've got Stefano, Steph Curry,
as the stop,
the MVP,
Steph Curry.
Showing up again without the injury.
Happy to join, guys, man. Happy to join. Obviously, highs and lows. We're going to go through two games, and I'm happier to say the most recent game was the win. So, yeah, a lot to talk about this week.
Yeah, would be pretty pretty depressing, wouldn't it, if we had to recap the Lazio game as the most recent one. But thankfully, we've had a game to bounce back since then. That's the beauty of playing two games in such quick succession. But we do have to talk about that Lazio game, unfortunately, because it happened, and it was a shit show. So let's dive into it straight off the bat then. Monday night, went to the Capitol. I think all of us in the predictions, aside from you, Stefano, were relatively confident that we'd pick up a result because Lazio had just been blitzed 5-2 by Napoli and their top four hopes were really hanging on by a thread. Fast forward a week, they've pumped us. They won again 4-3 against Genoa today and they're still definitely in with a fighting chance of the top four if you know they can get some help from teams above them dropping points like they did today. But yeah, we were outfought. You know, we came up against one of those Lazio sides that we've kind of got used to facing in recent years under Simone Inzaghi, where if the forward players are firing and the back three work as it should, it is a really, really difficult game. And that is exactly how it proved to be. So Joaquin Correa is a player that we know all too well now because he keeps scoring against us, to be honest. And he got the better of Tomori pretty much throughout the entire game, which was a shame to see. Feel like if you shut down a creative presence like that, then it makes everything easier. But he scored the first goal within 2 minutes, then scored shortly after half-time. Chiro Immobile, who else? He's now scored in three games in a row against us. He scored the third goal to cap off what was a pretty disastrous night, all told. And yeah, left returning to Milano with our tails between our legs. Maddie, do you think this was up there with one of the worst defeats of the season?
Absolutely. We looked like we didn't know how to play. We couldn't connect any passes. I feel like we had no sense of how to get the game under control. And watching that game, I was just like, if this is how we are going to play, we do not deserve to be in top four. Because I don't want to get top four and then watch us get annihilated by, you know, some shit teams in Champions League. Because that's exactly what would happen. We bounced back yesterday, but still, like, when we're under pressure, we're just not showing that we could handle it. And the common denominator is when Ibra's playing, we have a leader on the field. When he's not playing, we don't. And no one has stepped up to take that job, and the team just looks lost.
Yeah, it really wasn't good. It was. Do you know what? The first 30 seconds, all right, because we pressed high, we won the ball back.
Yeah,
Çalhanoğlu had that chance, and I thought, here we go. We've woken up. Here we go. We're gonna give him an absolute hiding,
and then they score 30 seconds later.
The problem is that we almost got too confident, and their first goal is an absolute joke. It's one of them where I write the match reports up, where I have it on the screen, and then if a chance happens, I will go to the notes to type up what happened, and I could just hear the commentary, and they just said, "Oh, Correa's rounded Donnarumma, he scored. It's 1-0 to that," and I'm like, what's that there? They were taking a goal kick the last I saw. What, you know, just one of those. Not good enough. If we were to analyse sort of how each goal went down, The first one, basically just a nothing ball in the air, hits Benacer's face, and then he slips as he's trying to collect it. And then bang, lovely little give and go between Correa and Immobile. Their chemistry, when it's in full flow, is so good to watch. And I just wish we had something like that. Occasionally, Ibra and Rebic has been really good. We've seen Ibra and Liao have glimpses. But you realise how much, and we'll come on to this as a broader topic, you realise how much chemistry we're lacking in our front four because they're not playing enough games together. They don't have that sort of... I don't know, sub-level understanding where they know where their teammate's going to be. You know, that pass that was released for the first goal by Immobile was inch perfect. And then you look at that chance later in the game when Immobile was put for one goal and he lobbed on a runner and it hit the post. We were lucky there. But again, another perfect through ball. The second goal, the pass from Luis Alberto, who was fantastic as well. You know, he's like an attacking midfielder who plays a bit deeper and absolutely pulls the strings. But his pass to find Correa, who went on to score, was just superb. But I was just really impressed with Lazio's attack throughout the game. And at the other end, we were never going to score because poor old Mario Mandzukic was left kind of plugging away on his own. He had a couple of half chances, but ultimately he was kind of feeding off scraps. And it just wasn't really there. I know that we've won the game since, so it becomes benefit of hindsight kind of thing. But Stefano, should we be worried about how we're playing against teams around us? Because we've now lost to Juve, Atalanta, Inter, Napoli and Lazio this year.
I think it's a hard one because, I mean, of course you're going to get games where, especially against teams of our level or teams of this top six level, top seven in Italian football, where you never know how the game's going to go down in the space of it. And all of a sudden you might lose one. And obviously we've made up for a lot of wins in the first half of the season. Going back to what you said about, was this one of the most concerning defeats of the season? It was in a way because it was very frustrating of how, you know, inefficient we were in attack. And obviously leaving ourselves open to the counterattacks and which killed us. A more frustrating defeat for me was the Spezia game where we just struggled to create anything. But in this game, at least we were showing, you know, there were signs of, you know, the one-on-ones with Çalhanoğlu in front of Pepe Reina, there were moments where we just weren't taking the chances and they just punished us. You know, like we just said there, 30 seconds into the game, we've had a half chance. 30 seconds later, we conceded and we're 1-0 down. It just goes to sort of, that's the issue for me. Are we that efficient when it comes to our attack? And we're going to talk about this in a second with the game. The victory we got against, we just played now, Benevento.
Benevento.
We showed signs again of just clearly not having all these lots of opportunities. And then we seem to be very hasty when it comes to like pressing high. And all of a sudden it's leaving us with a few problems when it comes to our defense. And are we sort of overcommitting? Are the players kind of feeling the pressure of the top four race now? So it was a concerning defeat with Lazio, but more so is because it's highlighting the fact that we're not taking enough chances. And you're right with the chemistry. There doesn't seem to be something that's there with the front four players, regardless of Ibra's there or not. And we'll come onto it in a sec with the Benevento game. We're seeing the frustrations with Ibrahimovic and Çalhanoğlu. And there seems to be a lack of chemistry between, you know, the four people up front that they're not being efficient enough and taking their chances.
Yeah, it's been a massive problem for us in recent weeks, taking our chances. I mean, I know we've banged on about it for the last couple of weeks now, but this idea that we overperformed in the first half of the season, which we probably did when you look at some of the parts of the squad, and everything suggested we were probably due statistically for a bit of a drop-off. And that drop-off has come back. I think we've almost gone too far the other way now. Like, I don't think that we're scoring the goals that we should with the chances that we generate. You know, I don't like XG as a stat. I've said it before. I think it's a bit abstract, a bit, you know, hard to kind of accurately calculate. However, in a case like this, I think our XG is a lot higher than probably the goals that we're actually scoring. We're creating chances, we ain't burying them. That's a problem against teams that don't give you many chances or they're burying them up the other end, which is exactly what Lazio did. What worried me is that Lazio were coming into it. I mean, you look at it two ways. It was a must-win game for them to keep their top four hopes alive, without a doubt. And they won it. They did the business, and they've done the business again today. So they're still alive and kicking. But they just had five goals put past them by Napoli the week before. You know, that to me was, I saw it as an opportunity. And I said, I can't remember if I said it or not, but I definitely said in the chat or whatever that for me, it wasn't necessarily a must-win game against Lazio. It was more of a must-not-lose. You know, if we can go and pick up a point, then that is okay. You know, we may temporarily lose ground, but it would mean that Lazio were totally out of the Champions League race. And, you know, then you look at other teams and see whatever they do. But then the direct clashes against Juve and Atalanta become more important. But yeah, it was frustrating. I mean, we have a real problem as well early in the second half, you know, from minutes 45 to 60, where there's a goal in the game. We've done this now against Atalanta. We did it against Inter. There's a goal in the game and we push too hard for that equaliser in the early stages of the second half. And it leaves us open. I mean, if you look even in the Benevento game yesterday, again, we'll come on to it, but they generated their chances. You know, they had their fair share of chances in that second half because we couldn't put them away. But I think we just go to sleep after the break, to be honest. And I can't put my finger on it. But there were some individual errors, without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, the first goal was a bad giveaway, no doubt about it. Bennacer should do better in that situation. And also, nobody tracked the run of Correa. You know, you've just got to have somebody run with him. And then he ain't going to have an easy, you know, easy round of Donnarumma and score. I think Donnarumma goes to ground maybe a little bit too easily as well. I think he should have shown him a bit more to the byline.
Didn't he misread where he was
going
to go, or he went down way too early? Honestly, all the goals blend in because they're all on counterattacks. So
yeah, that's true. That's true. And then the second goal, if you haven't seen the tactical analysis, it's under the match section on the website. But basically, I managed to freeze frame it where there were a couple of instances where it was a 2-on-2 break. And Pioli said this was a problem after the game, is that we left Immobile and Correa with space to run into too much 2-on-2. That's right, but what I'd say to Pioli is it's your job to fucking stop that, but never mind, we'll move on. There was a couple of occasions where Tomori should have stepped up and challenged Correa because Kier had Immobile covered. He did a really good job on that front, but he didn't. And that to me is like, I'm thinking now, is Tomori lacking in confidence a little bit? Because before, you know, in the few games after he first arrived, he would have absolutely stepped up and challenged Correa. And you know what? Occasionally, you'll get it wrong and he'll dance around you and he might have scored anyway. But the end result was a goal. So, you know, I think he could have done more in that situation. And also, the strange thing, and I know that defenders are briefed on this before they play. They know which foot their opponent prefers. So Tomori must know that Correa is a right-footed player. What I didn't understand is why he showed him onto his right foot, you know, and then he got off that was the only way he was going to beat him, with his strong foot shot into the top corner. But don't give him that chance. With Kier covering you just over your shoulder, show him inside. And if he beats you with a shot from the middle of the goal, then that's probably more on Gigio. I might be nitpicking there, but I thought that given the timing of that goal and given how it knocked the wind out of us completely, I thought it was a pretty bad one to concede.
Yeah, I think with Tomori's marking, it sums up how the team's playing. It's very nervous and not assuring, you know, regardless if it's attack or defence. They're not quite like, oh, should I go for it? There seems to be like a lack of clarity in his mind of what he wants to do. Was I'll never forget Tomori's debut for us against, I think he came on at halftime or something against Inter Milan in the Coppa game, and he had to mark Alexis Sanchez in that. And, you know, he was straight into the back of him. And despite the fact Sanchez signed him a few times, he was still on him, because he knew regardless if you might get past me one time, I've got the pace to keep up with you. But in this scenario here with Correa, it seems to just step off him. And that's what we used to critique Romagnoli for. And now he's kind of doing the same thing. So I hope he's not picking up these bad habits, because that's a cause for concern for me. But then is it potentially just nervousness, which is seeping down from the core of the team and going into individual players? I think it's more of that one, because we know how Tomori plays, and he's very aggressive. He's very fast. This isn't in his character set. So I feel like this is something that's more a team issue, which is now, you know, taking part in some certain players' heads. It was a shame to concede a goal like that against Correa, but there seems to be, like I'm saying, a deeper issue with the team, with nervousness and the lack of clarity and conciseness and efficiency, that they're just not, they're overthinking situations and not thinking with their sort of their minds and just going for it, really. And like you're right, rather you go for the tackle and he scores, then put him off and he scores anyway. But that's the value of hindsight, I guess, at the end of the day. But
yeah,
that there is definitely an issue with how we start second halves because, you say Atalanta game, Inter Milan game, Lazio game, we're looking so good to get an equaliser and then bang, it's killed off. Because when they go 2-0 up, you know that we're going to leave ourselves open to more counter-attacks going forward. And like that Inter Milan game, like the Lazio game, like the Atalanta game, we lost all those games 3-0 because the third goal comes from another counter-attack. So that's a massive cause for concern.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting point about of mental clouding. Maddie, if you were to put a percentage on how much of our struggles this year have been physical fatigue versus mental fatigue, what would it be?
Oh, man.
Just a random question I've come up with, not pre-prepared or anything, but it just got me thinking then, like, that's absolutely right about how we're not making the right decisions, etc. Sorry, Maddie, go on.
No, it's fine. I think physical has to be like 50% because of all of the injuries that we have had. Mental fatigue, I don't know. I mean, we went, 22 games unbeaten, 23 games unbeaten. Like, you don't do that if you're mentally weak. Like, that takes a lot. But the crash sense, you know, you can almost blame on mental fatigue. So I would say, like, do you mean just in general, or do you mean like what percent was physical compared to what percent was mental? Because I would say it's 50.
Yeah.
50 if it's just those two things. If not, you know, there's other aspects, but.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with that as well. I think in the second half of the season, like 2021, I feel like it's a mental issue that we have. Like you're saying, like, how have we done so well in 2020? And then obviously 2021, we completely capitulated. I feel like in 2020, we were riding this wave of momentum and emotion and obviously, you know, top place, all these sort of records we were holding with the unbeaten run. And I guess that Juventus game where we had injured players, we had players, you know, out of the game because of COVID suspensions or whatever it might have been. That was a defeat that we accepted due to the circumstances and obviously the opposition we were playing. And we played very well in that game. You know, we clawed it back to 1-1 and they beat us 3-1. But at some point from there, it seems to be that there's the fall off. There's the derby, the Coppa Italia loss that we had. There's also the 3-0 derby loss that we had as well. There's these chips of mental weaknesses that we just had along the way. And despite the fact that we've had some good scenarios where like the Manchester United fixtures in the Europa League, where I feel like mentally we were very strong and very unlucky in those games, it just seemed to seep its way through the season and get to each of the players' heads. And regardless, you're right. I think there's other issues at play, whether it's, you might think it's the coach and is he playing certain players or not, or should he have changed systems earlier? Is it players and their, you know, contractual issues off the pitch? Is Donnarumma's issue, is Çalhanoğlu's issue now seeping its way into the players' minds and their lack of consistency, because they've also equally been to blame for many performances. There's a lot of issues, and I feel like you mentioned this before on a few other podcasts, we're just sort of stumbling our way towards the end of the season, and I just pray to God that we get for top four. But, you know, the Lazio game was an issue because there seems to be, the nervousness, we tap into that, and I feel like you're right. I think Maddie's right with that 50-50. Bang on.
I'll throw another element of fatigue in there that maybe isn't as conventional, but perhaps tactical fatigue plays a part as well. Because I feel like, you know, our approach has been so well documented in terms of how we go about trying to win and control games. Seen as a pack, winning the ball high up the pitch, countering with speed and with efficiency, moving the ball fast vertically through the thirds, you know, relying on players like Ibra and Çalhanoğlu to quarterback the attacks, building predominantly down the left side, as in like, you know, 75% of our attacking plays on the left side. There is actually a stat about that somewhere. Yeah, tactical fatigue is another one because perhaps we've become quite easy to play against in that sense. Teams know what to expect from us. There isn't anything really coming down the right. That's not to say that Salamakers is a bad player, and he actually had a good game against that series, the man of the match for me, in amongst a bunch of other awful performances. But he tends to only be dangerous when he's playing centrally. So there isn't actually that much coming from the right flank itself. And I think that that's been problematic for us as the season's gone. We've become easier to play against. You know, if I'm a manager and I'm setting my team up against Milan, I'd have a pretty good go at it, you know, at stopping them, because I'd know what was coming. So for professional coaches, which I am most definitely not, you can imagine it's probably a little bit easier than that. But Gazzetta, I don't know if you saw it, Gazzetta Dello Sport did something during the week. Was in the build-up to the Benevento game that I thought was actually really fitting. They highlighted the Spezia game as the turning point for us, which I think is right. We had lost we lost a couple before that, I think. But they were against, obviously, Juve and Atalanta, and with weakened squads due to injuries, all that kind of stuff. But they said that that game was like a rock hitting the windscreen and just chipping it. And then from that, the crack widened and other cracks started to show from it, you know, as time goes on. And I think that that's a pretty fitting way of describing what's happened. But yeah, Lazio, absolutely a night to forget. What did you think about Donnarumma smiling with Pepe Reina and laughing after the game? I personally understand why people were angry given the circumstances that we now know about. However, you know, Gigio's Gigio, he's 22. And it's his former teammate, and are we expecting players to cry after every defeat? Probably not. Was it a good look out there on the field? Maybe not. I would say, you know, is there an opportunity to do that kind of thing in the tunnel? I don't know, with COVID protocol, maybe not. You know, you've got to remember that this would normally take place in the dressing room after the game. That's where they do their greetings and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's now out the window, so they have to say hello and whatnot out there on the field. I wasn't too bothered by it, but it appears a lot of people were.
I was. I mean, dude, you just got nailed 3-0. You got beat in your post. Like, show a little emotion. Don't be like, oh, hey, man, what's up? I'm chasing $12 million. How are you doing? You know? Like, fuck off.
No, I'm going to agree with that. I think spot on. Like, I'd be fuming. I put this in so many tweets. I've done a thread on it. I'd be livid. And it's whether if I play five-a-side football with a bunch of mates, you can't get spanked and then proceed to smile, especially when you have so many millions of fans watching you on with such a contractual saga going on in the process of it, and you trying to deem your value and your love for a club, and all of a sudden right. You're smiling after a hard defeat. Yeah, go on.
That defeat put us in fifth place.
Mm.
You know, it knocked us on the top four, and he's out there like not acting like he doesn't care. What the fuck?
It's just like it's such a bad PR move. Like, I just think, have some sense of the scenario you're in, and obviously all eyes on you. And I just think it's comical. It's comical. It makes us look like jokes, and the club look like a joke. And if it looks like to anyone that he's taken us for a ride, regardless of, you know, Reina obviously had a couple of years with us, and you know, they probably got close together being goalkeepers. I get it; it's part of the relationship bond that you grow when you work together in a football club for a couple of years. But just know who's watching. You've been at the club for, you know, 8 years, nearly a decade. Just know your fan base, know the people who are invested in yourself and the club. Just have a bit more wisdom. But he's also young. But no, I just think it's such a bad move. But
yeah, I think it was. It was the move of perhaps what you'd expect from a 17 or 18-year-old Donnarumma, a player who, as you say, doesn't understand those who are watching him and doesn't understand the magnitude of such a defeat and how it might go down on social media. But then the flip side, and we will come on to this story after the Benevento game, it's clear that he now understands the fans' anger, it would be fair to say, so maybe best to chalk that one off as a blip. If he were to do it again, you know, later on in the season, if he were to do it, if we were to, say, get beat by Juve and he goes and hugs Bonucci, that's it. You know, he'll have burned all of his bridges by doing something like that.
Does he live in a cave? Now he understands the fans' anger? Like, no. The dude is 21 years old, plays for one of the biggest clubs in Italy, and he's holding out a contract to go play for the rival. Like, if he doesn't think the fans are angry, he is extremely ignorant and lives in a cave.
Yeah.
He should have understood four years ago in that under-21 championship in Poland when fans were throwing money on the pitch. That was 4 years ago. And obviously, things have evolved. I understand he has emotions. And he might be 22, but he's probably got, like, he's been through so many things that not a lot of 22-year-olds have probably been through. you have to grow a bit of wisdom with that. You need to understand your situation. I feel like he's, you can't just sit on the age factor. He's not just a typical 22-year-old. He has a very, you know, Milan fans and ultras have a very close connection to the club as well. It wouldn't be the first time he's spoken to them as well. And this won't be the last time. And obviously, yeah, if he does something like that with Juventus, whether it's with Bonucci or Buffon, you can't do it. You can't do it in such a big game with also them linked to potentially signing him on a free. And it's just, you'll have people knocking on his door if he does something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. People literally do not fuck about. But yeah, I do understand why social media lost its head over an incident such as that. Again, it's picky moments kind of thing, isn't it? But yeah, less than a negative. Let's move on to the Benevento game. God, it would have been a dark episode if we hadn't have won this game last night. I guess the main part of it is that we went into this game with some serious questions that needed answering. You know, we needed to see some kind of defensive resolve. A clean sheet was absolutely imperative. You know, I know Benevento, they score goals. They're not, you know, they're not quite as bad as like a Crotone or whatever. Yeah, we needed some defensive resolve badly. We needed to score. We needed to score early to relieve any kind of nerves and pressure. We needed to command and control the game. There was no other option than a convincing win in this game. Otherwise, I think a lot of people would have written off top four altogether. Because if you can't do it in this game, the easiest of the five, then God help us when, you know, we're in the middle of a really tough final four games, which have still to come regardless. In my opinion, just to throw it out there, I don't think many of these questions were answered in this game. We got the win. We got a clean sheet, yeah. But I would chart this down in the column of we just about did enough. And I don't think that that's the kind of statement that some people were hoping for against a team that, yeah, Benevento scrapping for their lives. And you should never underestimate a team that comes and they're third from bottom, knowing that they've got a chance of staying up and all that kind of stuff. But they are absolutely awful at the same time. They're shocking. They've won one game since January the 4th. You know, they've been diabolical. And I think that there were times, there were periods within the game, not just one-off attacks and stuff, there were periods within the game where they were comfortably the better side. And that shouldn't happen. Because if that happens against Juve next week, we've seen today that they can score two goals in a few minutes and that's it, bang, lights out. So it wasn't necessarily the reassuring win that I hoped it would be, but I'll throw it over to you two to be a bit more positive.
I'm not going to be any more positive, and I'm really happy that Gian's not here because this is going to start a huge argument with him. But I'd argue that we haven't looked convincing all season. We, even though we went on 20 games unbeaten, a lot of those games were not convincing wins. They were 2-0 wins, like the game that we played on yesterday. And we never got out of first gear, and we used to say it's because we didn't need to. But it's because there is no second gear for us. Like, we're just a single cylinder engine. I think that's it. A single gear engine. I don't know. But, you know, we've had 16 penalties or something this season. A lot of those were to get the win or to get a point. And, you know, I was happy with the way that we played. I was happy. I've been a critic of Romagnoli for the past like 3 years, I feel like, on this podcast, and I was happy to see him play because, you know, it's exactly what he needed. And we really don't know what's going on with him, if he's going to stay or go, because, you know, everything, like, the club hasn't said anything. It's just all speculation. I would like to see him stay. I don't think he should be captain. But regardless, this is just a normal game that we won like the rest of the season. Hopefully we win on Saturday against Juve, or is it Sunday? And Sunday night. Get another win after that. Secure Champions League.
Yeah, it was quite a deceiving victory, I've got to say. Because the end of the day, we got the clean sheet. We finally been waiting for since start of March. A 2-0 sounds like a standard win, you know, solid win, but it wasn't that. It was a lot of, once again, a lot of nervousness in attack, a lot of nervousness in defence. I'll say one player who kind of looked quite impressive to me was Dalot. You know, I thought Dalot looked okay, considering he has a lot of bad games at right back. He looked quite impressive, but obviously against a very weaker side. Yeah, this doesn't look good considering the games we're going into are going to be much more difficult. Yeah, it's a hard one to pick this one apart because it's just, yeah, you're right. I don't think we've gotten out of first gear because I don't think we've ever had to. There's been a lot of 2-1s along the way. There's been a lot of, you know, 1-0 wins or whatever it is. I feel like, well, we battered Crotone at the start of this half season, but even that had its kind of issues with it. It's a really hard one. I feel like it comes with a sort of a nervousness because of the pressure's now on. Did we perform so well at the end of last season because the pressure was off? You know, essentially it was just go out there and play football. Potentially, that's probably why the attackers were able to do a lot better. And we surprised a lot of opponents because of a new system, a new formation, players surprising a lot of different defenders marking them. One thing as well I might say is that our players in our team now getting bored of our setup. I mean, it sounds a bit stupid when I say this, but like, is it, like you're saying, has it become a very much a rinse and repeat situation where we just come into every game, we know who's playing where? I'd say one of the best wins of this season has been the Hellas win, where there was a lot of freedom in positions. And, you know, we saw like Dalot playing as like, you know, his second goal was like a centre forward position. And I think that excited a lot of players. And I feel like now it's a lot. There's what annoys me a lot the most was Ibra shouting at Çalhanoğlu. So frustration is seeping into the team. That's not a good sign because you know that. I mean, I agree with Ibra because he expects a high level of quality. I just sometimes feel like he does it in a smarter way, but he's been around the block. He knows what he's doing. And we are all frustrated with Çalhanoğlu, regardless if he scores or not. It's concerning because we're going into bigger games. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I thought it was needed to be said. It's just whether that's the best. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I guess it's...
I don't remember I can't having... speak for Ibra. Ibra. Yeah. I don't remember having a player on the pitch who yelled at their own teammates as much as Ibra does. I don't remember the last player. I feel like they're all just quiet. They're like, oh, bad pass. My bad. Ibra's like, what the fuck are you doing? You know?
Yeah. No, you're right. I think Gijo might shout every once in a while and be like, you know, he's done a save or someone's done a defensive clearance and he'll shout and it's motivating. But it's different to really... I think Ibra's kind of going like, look, do you not know what you're fighting for? And I feel like he's the voice of the fans in that scenario. And that's, you know, it's fair that, you know, thinking about it now, it's actually brilliant that he does that because he has to call up people who aren't pulling their weight. And like I was saying about like how the scoreline deceives our performance, the same can go about Çalhanoğlu. He could score a goal, but his performance is still wishy-washy because what frustrates me the most is that the ball ends up on his legs. Well, a lot of one-on-ones, a lot of, you know, good chances, and he just blunders them. And he's the person where I feel like we could have the biggest upgrade in this squad and the situation can get a lot more better. But that's another topic for another day. But looking at this Benevento game, it's a hard one. It's very deceiving because, yeah, the scoreline is exactly what we wanted, but the performance wasn't what we wanted.
Yeah, I said after the game on social media, like, we're at the stage of the season, last five games, where results are the only currency, really. You don't get points for performances. You get points for scoring more goals than the opposition, and that's what matters at this point. However, you know, you look at the game like this against, as I say, an awful team. We've won once since early January. You look at the game like Parma away from home, who, again, absolutely shocking team. And you think, you know, a win is almost given. So you don't really learn anything from a victory. And I know that sounds so arrogant, but you know what I mean? When you're playing against a team that are so clearly down and out, you know, are battered psychologically, you know, there is no choice but to win that game for us. It feels like in order to make a significant statement, you need to really hammer them. So, for example, earlier this season, we beat Crotone at home 4-0. It was around the time that we were getting a lot of criticism from fans of our own fans and other team supporters saying that, you know, we've not beaten anybody properly yet. We've been winning games by one or two goals. And that's where we've had this thing about not having to get out of first gear. And then we beat Crotone 4-0 and it felt like a statement because we properly brushed the team aside. And we hoped that that would be the springboard for a more ruthless team, one that took all the chances and everything. It kind of ended up going the opposite direction. But yeah, I think front to back, there was nobody that stood out as poor to me, in all honesty. I thought Gigio didn't have an awful lot to do, let's be honest. Dalot looked good in glimpses. I thought when he started galloping down that right side on the break, you realise what a physical presence he is. But again, he didn't have an awful lot to do, to be honest. Mm. And the same could be said for Tomori and Romagnoli. I think Tomori looked a little bit shaky, but the clean sheet will do his confidence a lot of good. There were a couple of moments where his positioning wasn't quite there, one where he got beaten by Lapadula to a ball inside the box that could have been, you know, could have been worse had he fancied scoring against us. Romagnoli was really good. I thought his positioning was spot on throughout. He actually looked really good in the air. You know, everything that came in was dealt with by him. And I feel like it was almost a Kier-type performance, but you know, obviously with number 13 on the back. It was that kind of, I'm going to sit that little bit deeper. I'm going to cut out everything that comes in. I'm going to let you, Fikayo, push up and do some dirty work. And, you know, I'm going to look classy and elegant while I guide us to a clean sheet, which is, funnily enough, the first clean sheet since Romagnoli and Tomori started together during, I believe it was the Hellas Verona win. The 2-0 win over Hellas. Teo Gull, thank God for that, man. His confidence needed that. I'm glad that he scored. Couldn't miss, you know, but you've got to make a run like that to be in the position to score. So it shows to me there's still something in there in terms of attacking instinct, being in the right place at the right time. So, Benacer Kessier, it wasn't their most difficult game. It was never going to be. You know, Benevento don't have an awful lot in midfield. If they do, it's creative midfield. They managed to shut them out. Benacer was a little bit disappointing. You know, I think it's reflected in the ratings. He got 5.5, I believe. So it can be a little bit disappointing, perhaps not to have sort of stamped his authority. He got yanked off at halftime, obviously, for Sandro Tonali because he picked up a yellow card. But Tonali came on and looked a bit better than him, to be totally honest. He was pinging balls around well. There was one in particular, and it was a nothing pass. It didn't lead to anything, but he just opened his body to Tonali and pinged a beautiful curling ball out to Calhanoglu on the corner of the box, who trapped it under his foot. And I just thought, yeah, there we go. You know, if we ever need to break a team down, Tonali can be that guy who just sits behind the creative department and just says, give me it, I'll ping it, you know. So that was good to see. Salamakers, I thought, looked... I don't know. He wasn't as good as Lazio, and that feels weird to say because Lazio was a much worse game. But, yeah.
You may feel that way because there are so many negative spots in Lazio, and he could have been the only bright spot.
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
And in this game, there's just a little bit more to choose from.
He did get an assist as well in this game. So, I mean, that's
he did, I guess. Mm. Yeah, he did. And I will say, for that first goal, which we must talk about, the link-up play in and around the edge of the box was absolutely fantastic. You know, it's times like that where you see Ibra wasn't even that directly involved in this particular goal in the sense, you know, the final few passes. However, he makes the defence sit that bit deeper, which allows us to ping passes around on the edge of the box. And then next thing you know, if you get a couple of them right, you're in. And that's what ended up happening. I thought it was a nice finish for Hakan. I'll give him that. Apart from that, he didn't do an awful lot else. But that was good play between him and Salamakers, definitely. Just, again, it goes to show a little bit of quality, some smart movement, and you can pick up in a team like that, no problems. And I think doing so that early in the game as well really helped us, settle the nerves and all of that kind of thing. So that was pretty spot on. And then the second goal, I was absolutely convinced was offside at first. Slipped the ball through to Ibra, who looked to be stood in his own postcode. But nevertheless, he was onside, played onside by the left back. And he should have buried that, to be totally honest. I think if Ibra's been back a few games, he definitely buries that. But as I say, good gambling from Teo to know that the rebound might come to him and he nabs in and, yeah, bang, 2-0. Wasted a lot of chances on the counter again. There was one that I counted in the first half, which was where the corner was cleared. And I believe it was Dalot just flicked the ball over. And next thing you know, we had a 4-on-2 and we somehow squandered it. You know, that was one of the chances that we should have taken. And then we had another really advantageous situation where a ball was just kind of clipped down the right flank and two of their players slipped and Benacer ran onto it. And then next thing you know, we've got an overload through the middle. But again, wasteful. We're not making the right runs. I've noticed that whenever we have a counter that's been, you know, split down the middle like that, the two runners always just run down the sides like that. We ain't going to do that because it's easy to defend that. You know, you're showing them out wide, essentially. It reduces the quality of the scoring chance. So I think we just even something as simple as the runner's cross when we're on a counter-attack or something like that, just to throw them off, would work better. Yeah. But earlier in the season, we were scoring those. You know, we were burying those counter-opportunities, and that was determined to be our strength. But perhaps a bit of that's where your mental fatigue comes in. Decision-making is affected by that, especially when you're under pressure. But aside from that, not an awful lot else to say. It was 3 points. And I suppose those are three very precious points given the circumstances. Napoli drew at home today against Cagliari. I'll go on record now as saying watch out for Cagliari when they come to San Siro for the last home game of the season, because they have picked up massively in recent weeks. They look like a good side that are hard to beat. When Napoli scored early... Yeah, when Napoli scored early today, I thought, oh, here we go, they're going to get a few put past them. But fair play to Cagliari, they really dug in and they got the equaliser that I won't say they deserved, because Napoli squandered quite a few chances. They had a bit of the Milan syndrome. But yeah, Nandez, there's a player I wouldn't mind picking up. He looks superb. And then Atalanta, Golini got sent off. They went down to 10 men, went a goal up, and I thought, surely not. But then Sassuolo equalised through Berardi, and... in the end, Atalanta missed a late penalty, I think, to win it. So they've ended up dropping 2 points as well. It looked like Juve were heading that way, but they've turned it around in the last few minutes against Udinese. It'd have been massive if they dropped points there. But saw enough from that game to suggest that Juve aren't necessarily a team to fear like they have been every other time we've gone to the Allianz Stadium, it seems. So we've got them next Sunday night. It's interesting because this might actually be determined as the battle of two teams that are kind of in a semi-crisis. You know, Juve were never really out of the top. They were always hanging around the top three spots, you know, when we were leading the league. They were always just a couple of points behind Inter or whatever. But they've fallen off. You know, they've dropped a lot of points that they will be very mad with this season. They got hammered at home by Fiorentina. They lost away against Inter and Napoli. They lost at home to Benevento. That's their only bloody win since January the 4th or whatever. They lost away at Atalanta recently. They drew 2-2 away at Torino. They've drawn away at Hellas. Drew away at Fiorentina. They're stuttering, you know. They're not the old Juve. They seem to be having their problems. They seem deficient. And I didn't think that this would ever happen with having a personality like Cristiano Ronaldo in the team. I thought that he would never kind of let things slip. But he's sound by the sound of it.
Man, crybabies always let things slip.
Like Gerrard.
It's true.
Slippy Jean. No,
They definitely are. I think we can look to, like I said, I feel like whoever's going to drop out of top four is going to be between us and them. They do not look like their usual self. I feel like they're suffering from a lack of quality in their midfield sector. It will be a massive bonus if Chiesa doesn't make this game. I feel like he's the only threat I'm really worried about from Juventus, from a level like that. Obviously, he hammered us in the first time we played in this season. He didn't make the game today, which is good for us, but I'm concerned if he makes that fixture next week, and obviously isolating the left back again, where we've seen issues about this in the past. And I'd probably say, like, clawing off the Benevento game, clawing off the Lazio game, talking about how we squander a lot of opportunities. I feel like we're lacking a ball winner in midfield. I just feel like, I mean, we don't have one. We don't have a true, like, we used to have, probably the last one we ever had was Bakayoko, someone to really shut down a counterattack from the opposition. Kessié is good. He's physical, but also, he might commit himself into attack and all of a sudden he's no longer there to help out in the counter. Benacer's not that. Tonali's okay. We don't have a true ball winner. I'm not saying we need one, but in situations where we're not being consistent up front, that's what's led to a lot of our goals, because the back two need protection. And we saw it against Benevento as well. They were just getting these pockets of space in front of the defence, you know, outside the box. You know, someone with a better shot on them is going to test the keeper a lot better. And we got away with it in many games this season. So, yeah, Juventus is going to be an interesting game. It's going to be, obviously, there's a lot of stories going into that. There's the Donnarumma fiasco. There is the top four race. There is, obviously, we need to make amends for the first game that we got battered by them this season, the 3-0 loss. There's a lot on the line here. It's basically a massive, it's a massive game. I don't think it's going to be like, if we lose this, it's massively concerning. But if we draw this, the story will continue, obviously, who's going to finish in top four. And that involves Napoli, it involves Atalanta, it involves Lazio, us and Juventus. So it's going to go to the wire. But it's a huge game. It's a huge game. And if we can get this win,
Stefano,
it's massive.
If you say too much, people aren't going to watch your episode on Wednesday.
It's true. It's true. But yeah, no, it's a massive game. I mean, the fixture itself is just, it's big. It's always been big.
Yeah, it makes me nervous. They have our number. They always have. And I don't think – neither team looks good. Like, both teams look like shit. I don't know how we're – you know, where we are. But, I mean, I know how we got here, but the past couple weeks. Juve looks so scatterbrained. They look like a ton of stars on a pitch that just can't mesh. Mm-hmm. And then some random American on there as well. But
like this podcast.
Yeah, right. I think that we'll squeak away a win as long as Ibra can play all 90. I've been shitting on him all season. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I think even if we win against Juve, we can still definitely not make Champions League. I don't think that this is the game. I think the game is going to be the two games are going to be against Torino and Cagliari, because those are the two that are going to, like, we drop easy points against easy teams. Anything disrespectful to them, but like Torino is fighting for to stay in the league. They're going to be hard to play against. Mm. And Cagliari, you know, got to draw against Napoli. So
they're in the same boat as well. They're in the relegation. Yeah. So, yeah.
I wasn't sure, so I didn't want to say that. I just know that Torino's down there. Yeah. So.
No, it's between Torino, Benevento, and Cagliari. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I honestly don't know how Cagliari are down there. I guess they've had the rocket lit up them in the last few weeks, but I've been impressed with them recently. But, it sounds like we could almost put a nail in Pirlo's coffin, to be honest. You know, they had that disappointing season.
I would love that.
So would I. I did a report earlier in the week. It was a Gazetta thing, basically saying that Juve have actually based their entire budget around qualification for the Champions League, making up a certain percentage of their revenue, so around about 25%. So if they don't get it, then they've got a lot of costs that need to somehow be footed, and they're already over 400 million euros in debt. So it's catastrophic. So that's why I wouldn't 100% rule out Pirlo getting sacked before the end of the season if they need to bring in Allegri early or whoever it may be to rescue the situation, because if they don't get Champions League football, it sounds pretty damn disastrous.
Yeah, I was going to ask you guys, Juventus ended up winning, but who do you think it would hurt more to not get Champions League, us or Juve?
100% them. 100%. You know, this was part of
ridiculous.
I would love it, man. They would have to sell so many people. It'd be fantastic.
I think their wage budget is three times ours, or well, two and a half, three times half what that. Our wage budget is. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, you're paying a million player 30 million net. I mean, that's obscene. And there was something which I wrote up, and it was from Franco Aldini, who is obviously a pretty well-known journalist and Milan fan and everything. And he was saying that it actually isn't a financial disaster for us at all to miss out on the Champions League. I mean, the owners have repeatedly said we haven't even budgeted for the Champions League next year. If we get it, it's a bonus. We get 50 million that we didn't think we were going to get. But essentially, we're a debt-free club that are cutting its wage bill and making wiser investments. The value of our squad continues to rise. Elliot have pumped over 600 million into the club to make it stable. I'd say the process of cleaning up the accounts is going well. And basically being debt-free, And also having some players that we know we're going to be able to sell and not be a problem this summer. If you think about the amount of money that Juve and Inter might need to make to raise in capital gains this summer because of the losses that they've made, you're talking about selling a Barella, a Lukaku, a Hakimi, someone like a really big player to make money. And then, you know, Juve, again, you're talking about offloading Cristiano or not redeeming Morata, or, and they might not mind that, to be honest. But for us, we're just like, great, we can get rid of Krunic, we can sell Laxalt, Caldara and Conte when they come back from loan, and we can generate our money that way. You know, if needs be, we can sell Pobega for some capital gains and then just include a buyback. We can be smart with our investments. So long story answer to that question. It definitely hurts Juve more if they don't get in, because that's the very least that they assume. You know, they actually just assume that they're going to win the title every year. And what they were really striving for is to win the Champions League. But now to potentially crash completely out of everything would just be shocking for them. And annoyingly, I don't think it's going to happen. I still think they're going to finish in the top four. But we'll see. I mean, I'm just looking at Juve's stats in the league. You know, they've got Cristiano Ronaldo on 27 goals. You can't knock him. I mean, I know the guy's wasting chances, and but a game like today, he comes in and scores two goals in the final 10 minutes to earn his team 3 points. That's Cristiano Ronaldo. You know, for all the misses and for all the not the word I'm looking for. I don't know what. Theatrics and all that kind of stuff. That's what you get from him. You get a match winner. He's got 27 goals in the league this season. And Morata's got 9, but he's been awful. A lot of offside goals. It's become a bit of a meme. And a lot of missed chances. And then it just kind of drops off. You know, you've got players like Dybala with 3, Rabiot with 2, Kulusevski with 4, Ramsey with 2, Sandro, Bonucci with 2. I mean, they're defenders. They just haven't had that balanced contribution, which means that when Cristiano hasn't done it, none of them have done it. I think the bottom line is to keep him. And if Chiesa does play, we've got to keep them too quiet. Yeah. Because if we leave Chiesa in isolation against Teo, left side of our defence again, it's curtains, because he's got the quality to hurt us without a doubt. So anyway, score prediction. We never win here. We still haven't won a game away against Juventus at their new stadium. Oh, no, we might have won one, sorry, I think, when Gattuso scored the winner. I could be wrong on that. But, yeah, we just can't win games here. I think this is going to be tough as well, because they're going to be fired up, but I just feel like this is going to be a cagey game where both teams know that winning would be amazing, but it doesn't get them in to the top four, guaranteed, but losing would be absolutely catastrophic. So for that reason, I want to predict a draw, and I'd say I would sign up for that right now. I would sign for the draw right now, and then let's just have it as a 3-game shootout. If we win those first 2 games out of the 3, we must be in good shape, you know, then. But I just have a bad feeling, so I'm going to go 1-0 Juve.
I think that if it's a tie in the 80th minute, Juve is going to win it, because as much as I hate Ronaldo, he's a huge difference maker in the last 10 minutes of a game. I'm going to say 2-1 us, and it's going to be 2-0 going into the 80th minute, and they're going to have a little bounce back, but not quite get it.
I think the key for Juventus in this is that they can afford the draw, because obviously our head-to-head, they are superior because they won the first game. I think they're going to look into this and they're going to go, you know what, if we can draw this game, we could potentially offset a loss against Inter Milan, because Milan have to play Atalanta the last game of the season. Basically, the both results will probably counterbalance each other. And it's basically, it's a shootout. Let's see who's got the better head-to-head. And even if we draw level on points, they're still going to be, they'll get the spot over us. They're going to look for a draw. If you tell me if Chiesa is playing or not, I'll give you a different answer. If Chiesa is not playing, I think we beat him 2-1. I think we have just as many threats in isolation play. Their fullbacks are very weak. Danilo and Alexandro, they've completely fallen off. So players like Liao and Rebic, I feel like they can have a field day against them. I think they'll play safe and line up with a back three, honestly, to nullify Ibra and Liao. But if Chiesa plays, it's going to be a draw. If he doesn't play, I think we're going to win 2-1. So, I mean, I'm sorry to give you 2 results, but yeah.
Well, Well, no, it's fair, because if that happens now, then at least you can say that you have both covered. yeah, I don't know. Fingers crossed for the wins, right? Because it will just be so, so big. I mean, I hate presuming hypotheticals, but let's say that we find a way to win this game. Regardless of the massive boost for confidence heading into the final three games, we're almost there. You know, we're almost there. It means we can almost afford to lose one of our last three games, and that may well happen. You know?
Well, we're going to lose to Atalanta 100%.
I think we are as well.
Yeah,
that game worries me a lot more than this upcoming Juve game does. I think if you want to talk about a team that has our number, Atalanta have just absolutely wiped the floor with us every time they've played us. Even that 1-1 draw when we were on our amazing run last season, we had injuries. You know, we were lucky to emerge with a point from that one. So we need to essentially rack up the points before that last game and assume that we're getting nothing. But the hope is that other results can just... And I don't like hoping for a team. You always got to take care of your own business. But when we're in this kind of... you know, point of the season. If Napoli can drop points in a silly game like that again, then who knows? Who knows where we might be going into that final game? So, yeah. Right. Questions. Well, there is going to be a question, but we better talk about the incident first. So after the game last night, it was reported by Sky Italia. It's since been reported by other sources that Gianluigi Donnarumma, there was a group of Milan fans who were outside Milanello on Saturday prior to the game, and they wanted to speak with Donnarumma, and there was a bit of hesitation at first, but he decided to go out and speak to them. Some strong words were exchanged by the sounds of it. Strong words probably being the nice way of putting it. But during it, apparently Donnarumma said, you know, it's me who decides, I want to stay, stuff that we've heard from the media a long time now, but then there was a couple of reports saying that he sort of left the scene of the confrontation in tears because it clearly rattled him that people were so angry. So first of all, where we stand on that, on Donnarumma's reaction, and do you think the fans were in the right to do something like this?
Absolutely. Point. Could you imagine if there was fans in the stadium right now, he'd be getting ridiculed every single game. And I wish that there was, because I mean, at this point, I don't even want him on the team. I want to get money for him, but every 4 or 5 years to do this again, it's just like, what's the point? Also, if your highest paid player on the team is your goalie, there's some business problems at that club.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Because CA wants, what, $3.5 million, and we want to give him $2 million? I'd give Kessier $8 million and Donnarumma $2 million. You know?
That is a fair point. I mean, there is definitely an argument that if your highest paid player isn't your striker, or a star forward, your match winner, the one who brings points to the standings and takes you, you know, from being a top six club to being a top four club or even a title challenger, which then repays that investment because he's got you there. There is definitely an argument that the structure of your squad from a wage point of view is wrong if you know your match winner isn't there. And it's not like Donnarumma's just above what the others are earning if he were to earn $8 million a year. You know, Ibra gets his $7 million net, but you've got to factor in that that's going to be offset by the tax relief next year, so it's not going to cost us as much in gross. But also, the club have apparently set an internal salary limit of around about $4 million. So in theory, no player bar the exceptions will go above that. And for a goalkeeper to be basically double that seems a bit counterintuitive to me. And dare I say, I'm at the point now where my emotional attachment to Gigio has eroded so much that the financial aspect of the situation has just, you know, surpassed it to me. And I'm thinking to myself now, if we want to give Gigio this 5-year deal at 8 million net, so that's 40 million net in total over the deal, 80 million gross, you're probably talking 20 million in commissions to Raiola and bonus payments and everything that comes with it. So you're talking 100 million commitment there. That's what's being talked about. And then you talk about Maignan, and the rumour is the entire package for him would cost around about 40 million euros. You know, that's transfer fee and wages. We've then got 60 million euros to do something with. And also we've got a goalkeeper who is top quality. You know, he's kept 19 clean sheets in the league this year. 19. That's just ridiculous.
He doesn't get beat near post, I can tell you that.
And then you've got the money left over. And also you sort of rebalance the wage structure of the squad a little bit in a way that, in my opinion, is beneficial. So I'm like almost in favour of, you know, thanks for the memories. But if you really cared and you wanted to give us a reason to get behind you, you'd have not let this drag on into such a delicate moment of the season. And before people comment, that absolutely goes for Hakan as well. I'd be glad. I'd say thank you for the contributions that you did make, but I would not be bothered to see the back of him at this stage. You know, I know he scored the goal yesterday that gave us the lead, etc. But I don't think his performances overall warrant playing hardball like he is, warrant the standoff, the stalemate, for the sake of a million. You know, make that bonuses and say to him, earn it. If you want that extra million, earn it with goals by getting us into the top four, whatever it may be. I cannot believe that it's dragged on this far, and I apportion a small percentage of the blame, or perhaps just a percentage of the blame, to Maldini and Massara as well. I feel like this should have been sorted before the season started. So seasonal objectives weren't a big deal. You know, you've then got players who, we were top of the league for over 20 rounds this season. That's your time to negotiate and say, look at the project we've got here. Do you want to still be a part of it? We assume the answer is yes. Let's work something out. Let's carry on. Now we're in a position where they've got 2 months exactly left on their contract, and we may or may not get top four because the season's kind of fallen apart. And now they're saying, well, we want to wait and see if we get Champions League first. Timing of the negotiations wasn't there, in my opinion. But then also, if you've got two players who are determined to kind of test the market anyway, maybe Maldini's hands were tied a little bit. But we've been left with a very difficult situation. I'm almost glad that Maldini has come out and said that we won't revisit things until the end of the season, because it should just put everything to one side for the time being. Let's get the season over and done with, and then we've got a few weeks just to sit down with them and say, this is how it is. If you want to stay, then this is our best offer. If not, your replacement is literally stood outside the door. I don't know. I'm getting bored of it now, but I was a little bit upset to see that that it happened yesterday. I don't know why. I understand the anger of the fans, and the Curva stood, if it was indeed, and it sounds like it was there, are known for being at the forefront of fan action, especially when it comes to contentious issues surrounding the club. So they're always going to be that way. But there was just something that didn't quite sit right with me, that this occurred on the day of a game and they reduced one of our star players to tears. Regardless, I don't know what they said. He might have just cried over nothing. We don't know.
But he's cried in the past over fan interactions.
Yeah. I mean, you can say what you want about Gigio's mentality, but clearly something was said, you know, that got a reaction. My only problem with it is that was on a few hours before a very, very important game. So I would have said, lads, can you just maybe do it next week? Because we don't know how that could have gone. You know, we really don't.
Is he crying over harsh truth, though? That's the thing. I mean,
perhaps. I'd like to know what he said.
If you're going to make your bed, you got to sleep in it too, man.
Yeah, 100%. Yep. 100%. You know, I think we're all really fed up with this. We're all really like, I think you just got to stick or twist. And just like, I think he can't cry. Like, I just feel like it's some crocodile tears. I think like it's nothing. I can't give any sympathy to a player like that. He's earning very well for himself as a player. You know, a goalkeeper should not be your highest earner at a club. This is not sustainable. He is a toxic agent. We have to continuously deal with this every time it's a contract renewal. I'd rather sign him if we can, sign and sell. Get the wage structure balanced again. This is just such a big issue. And what kind of I didn't like but I understood was that what they said about the Juventus game. If you don't sign by the Juventus game, don't play. That's, I mean, I don't know. That for me is a bit, are we going to now have our all eyes on Donnarumma's performance?
Yeah, I think we would regardless, though. Because if we lose and then he goes his time for Juve, it's like, fuck you, dude.
Yeah.
Well, he actually denied that he had any kind of agreement with Juve, which I suppose is understandable. But Maldini did something really clever in his pre-match interview by saying, we're not going to talk to them about renewals until after the season, because what he's basically saying is there's no chance of us signing him before the Juve game. He's going to play a tough shit, deal with it. You know, we know Maldini doesn't have a great relationship with the Curva anyway, but yeah, I think he was clever in what he said there to diffuse that. I guess there comes a point, doesn't there, where greed kind of masks the tears a little bit, and I think people have seen through it this time. I'll go on record, I still think that he stays, but I think he's burned most of his bridges now. I really do. I don't think he's ever going to be fully welcomed back when fans come back to the stadiums. I don't think his name... I think the first time there are fans back at the stadium and his name gets announced, there'll be jeers.
100%.
And that is a really, really difficult situation. And that was one thing that I worry about with the way that the Curva went about it is they might have just driven him away by doing that. Because he'll be thinking, now, what's the point in staying at a club where I'm hated, where the fans don't respect me? They question my integrity by saying that I shouldn't play against a team that I'm linked with by the media. That might be what pushes him away.
I think that he could also think, if I sign, they'll love me more. Because
he'd be naive if he thinks that.
This whole situation makes him look naive.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
he hasn't grown up, has he? I don't think. I would love somebody who is really close to the situation. So let's say, I don't know, one of Raiola's entourage, whatever, to actually say as a percentage figure how much of this whole thing is because of Raiola and how much is Donnarumma. Because I wouldn't be surprised if it was very much mostly Raiola who is just pushing and trying to get assurances, trying to get a big commission, blah, blah, blah. And that Donnarumma actually has just said, you get on with it, but I want to stay. That's it, you know. But then at the same time, you know, if he wants to try and save face with the fans a little bit, he needs to take control of the situation back now because there's less than 2 months on his deal. And it's a crucial moment of the season. And the fans' anger has boiled over. We've seen it now, physically, in the flesh, their anger has boiled over.
Do you think all of the players coming out in the media saying, like, I didn't even look at the salary, I just signed the contract, and Ibra, like, I signed the contract myself, it's almost like a jab at him. Like, do you think they're all, like, throwing jabs?
I mean...
Well, Shevchenko said he didn't care about the salary, and then interestingly, it wasn't a question about Donnarumma. That was the interesting thing, but he sort of said it like, I didn't care what the salary was when I came here. And then you've got the Maldini example as well that keeps being quoted about how he just said, let's keep the same terms. I just want to sign. I just want to play another year. I just want to.
Yeah.
And that's what attachment to the colours means to me. Let's say you've got a good agent who's really good at extracting every penny from a club. That should hurt you when it's the club that you supposedly love. You know, when it becomes borderline extortion, that's when you step in. That's when you step in and say, sorry, I'm not comfortable with this. I kind of just want to get on with playing. I'm really happy with 8 million, to be honest. Makes me the highest paid keeper in the league. I'm only 22. I'm pretty good with that. I'm going to make sure that we're playing in the Champions League next season. The ideal situation, the ideal resolution to this for me is that we sign him on any kind of extension, 2 years preferably, let's say. We give him the 8 million that he wants, and there's a release clause in there linked to us not qualifying for the Champions League, because that then means that if we qualify for the Champions League in those 2 years, we'll have the money to pay it anyway. We'll have the money to keep him and hopefully to negotiate another extension. But if we don't, then he leaves, we receive a fee, and neither party looks like the bad guys. because the club like was a release clause. It's not our fault. And Gigio's like, well, I've got to go. Someone's paid my release clause. There's no like a massive breakdown in things. I still think that's the ideal rather than maybe negotiating a fee flat.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. That'd be perfect. I mean, I get it. I think just wrapping things up, we've spoken about this quite a lot, and we agree on a lot of things about this, but one thing has to be said about footballers these days, that there isn't the loyalty that was there when Shevchenko and Maldini were playing and prior to that. No. It's all changed these days, but I think you should then at least have some sort of acknowledgement of the club you're at. Milan has always been a family-orientated club. A lot of, you know, lifers like Baresi or Maldini, even players like Ambrosini, who've been there for, you know, basically like probably every year of their career, bar one when he went off to Fiorentina. Like, just players like that and just know the club. I know we've fallen off from grace, but know your fan base as well. And I feel like it's just, it's a shame that it's gotten to this point. It's really sad. And, you know, if he is crying real tears, then fair enough. You know, I get it. Like, but at the same time, you've created this scenario yourself. You've chose your agent. You've chose this to let it get to this far. And I agree with Ollie. I think the ideal scenario is sign itself, in my opinion.
I'm sick of him. Sick of his antics.
I thought you meant me.
I am sick of you too.
Playing devil's advocate here. Playing devil's advocate here. I wonder if the tears are a sign of helplessness. As in, like, I don't know what I can do. You know, my agent's doing this. I want to stay. I don't know. Anyway, that's just me. Probably them poking.
He's a 22-year-old grown man.
Also,
he can fire him whenever he wants. He can, he's not being like, this isn't like.
Yeah, what does Raiola have on him?
He hasn't got his soul. Like, this isn't a Marvel film like Thanos or something like that. Like,
Raiola is like Voldemort, man.
One thing I will say is players don't often ditch Raiola. Now, I don't know why that is, because, I mean, I guess there's often a contract between a player and an agent as well. Mm. And I wonder if, like, Gigio would owe something to him if he sacked him.
I was going to say, who did Insigne have as his agent? Was it Raiola and he ditched him? I can't remember if Lorenzo Insigne had Raiola. I can't. It's in my head. I feel like an agent's.
It was somebody who was really loyal to a club. I think it might have been Insigne, yeah.
And I feel then he like hired, it was him, yeah.
He hired, I can't remember his name. We met with him at Casa Milan and we still keep getting linked with Insigne, which is the most random transfer link in a while. Yeah. But yeah, I think you're right on that front. Listen to the questions.
I don't think he's like got as much of a hold as we think. Like, I don't know. Unless Thorum is that naive or he signed some sort of death penalty contract with Raiola. I don't know. It's a bit, I'm not buying that. No offense, but
you never know when he convinced Milan to sign Donnarumma's older brother and pay him $1 million a year.
Maybe that's all in negotiations. Maybe that's the story. Maybe he wants his
Antonio's contract.
Let my brother stay.
Right, listen to questions. Let's go through these quick fire because I've seen the time. Maddie's going to be fuming. We got three from Astro, so we'll answer this quickly. AC Milan's objective for next season? I'll answer this first of all. A more comfortable top four finish, I guess. I don't think we're ready to fight for the title yet. I think we're probably still a couple of summers away from fine-tuning our team. We've got a lot of deadwood to get rid of. The balance isn't quite there. We need some threat on the right, and we need to figure out what we're going to do after Ibra leaves in summer 2022. That's going to be pretty big as well. If we comfortably get top four next season, I'll be pretty happy.
Same.
Okay, fair enough, very quick. I think, as a joke, it would be European Super League winners. I think that's got to be up there. realistically, I would agree. Top four, it all obviously goes upon how we finish this season. It kind of rolls back to your whole thing about who's more detrimental, if who gets top four or not. I feel like it would cripple a team like Juventus, but with us, I feel like it would just stall our progression. It wouldn't allow us to buy a player like Vlahovic or maybe potentially keep Tomori at the club. It depends where we finish, but I would love to see like a more comfortable top four finish and a better run in the cup, like the Coppa Italia or where it's the obviously not the Champions League if we get into it, but I'm not going to kid myself. So a nice Coppa Italia, maybe a final, or even potentially win that.
And also, if we do get into the Europa League, If we finish in the Europa League places, I would like us to go further in that competition, potentially win it. If we get a top four this season, I would say speculatively just to make it out of the group stages would be pretty good, because I think we're going to be seeded pretty badly. So we're going to get two difficult teams, I think, but I never know how it works.
I would like to win the Europa Conference League.
Agreed. Yeah, that's one that we ain't got yet in the trophy cabinet.
Yeah.
Right.
We need to get our
one player,
coefficiency
one player,
up.
This from Astro again. Yeah. Well, with constant European competitions, you get there. Mm. Astro, who would you sign in the next transfer window? One player, realistic signing.
Vlahovic, or however you say his name.
I'm almost saying that. Go on.
I'm going to go Vlahovic, but I'm going to pick someone different. Haaland would be. I would love to get like a player like Ilicic. I think he'd do really well for us. I know it's a bit sort of not really like a marquee signing, but I would like someone like Ilicic at the club. I've always been a big fan of him. Left foot, has been a wand. Yeah, someone like Ilicic or a really good attacking midfielder to take over Çalhanoğlu's place. That would be the ideal signing for me.
Yeah, I think if we get into the Champions League, I will say a really good right winger who fits everything about us, about our projects, like Jonathan Ikone from Lille. Mm. Yeah, if we'd sign him from a title-winning Lille side, depending on how they get on, then that would be amazing. A realistic one for if we get the Europa League, I would say Çalhanoğlu will probably leave if we don't get top four. And I'd replace him with Vlasic from CSKA Moscow, because he looks like a more well-rounded version of him. Some people might be apprehensive about signing a player from a league like that, but if you've seen him and you've seen him in action for Croatia, he's a serious player. And something like that, you know, is probably something we could do even if we do miss out on top four.
I would say as well, quickly, so I just thought about it now, we talk about it as well, Rodrigo De Paul. I mean, I would love someone like him.
I know he gave away
the penalty against Juventus, but he's been spot on. We talk about him in the group. We all love him. I think he would be a shoo-in to take the attacking midfield spot. I think he's brilliant player.
Can play attacking midfielder or on the right, which is good versatility to have. Also, if we were to switch to a 4-2-2-2 full-time, he's perfect for that right attacking midfield role. Salamax would still get his games because we'd be playing over 50 next season again, so I wouldn't worry about that. But he would be great for that position. I worry about the price tag, and I think it's a bit too early to give over a prospect like Hauger. I would throw in the two academy lads, Pobega and Brescianini, and say you can have Hauger on loan. Maybe, or you throw in like a Caldara, or you adjust the cash somehow. But if we are really in for him and we think that we can get that done, I would be pushing down on the accelerator, to be totally honest, because I think he's going to leave this summer and he would be an instant upgrade in a position where we need it. Final one from Astro. What are your thoughts on Inter winning the title? They mathematically won it today. I'll say fair play to them. They've absolutely deserved it over what will be obviously the 38 games. They've been by far the best team. They went on an incredible run to surge past everybody, including us. They've got the best start 11. They've got the best defence. They're a very solid team. Antonio Conte is a winner. He's now won 5 out of the last 7 leagues in terms of seasons that he's managed. But what I will say is, and I said this before, I don't feel like this Scudetto, looking back in 10 years, 20 years, will quite carry the same weight from an emotional standpoint, because there was nobody there to witness it. You know, not only have they won a league in front of no fans this season, which is a shame more than anything, you know, even though I hate all their fans, most of them, not only have they done, but they didn't win it when they went on the pitch. You know, they've had to watch Atalanta drop points for them to win it. And, you know, the team couldn't even really get together. They were all in their separate houses and stuff. So, in fact, it's such an anticlimactic way to win. An anticlimactic way to win a Scudetto that people will look back on and be like, that's the COVID Scudetto. Earned it on the pitch, absolutely. I just don't know if it quite carries the same magnitude as others. If we'd have won it, I'd have been absolutely buzzing, of course. But I'd have also been gutted that I didn't see a single game from it. You know, you look back in years and think, I didn't see that title-winning team. We weren't allowed in, you know. The one game that they did allow fans in for was when we beat them 2-1. So
I could really, I mean, like, it's like Juve 2.0. I'm saying this for Anthony because he's been preaching it all day. They took Juve's CEO, their coach, and one of their players, and now look, they won the league. Honestly, I'm not going to, like, say go out there and congratulate them, but I could really care less. I mean, if I feel like it's such a weird season, you know, and I'm not going to say that this means less because to their fans it probably means more because they haven't won it in 10, 11 years. You know, it's their first trophy in 11 years, and they did it by knocking us off the top. So, you know, it's probably more rewarding for them, but more power to them. They deserved it. They just destroyed everything. So,
Yeah, fair play to them. I think, you know, you can't discredit a team for winning a league title. It takes a hell of a consistency to do it. It's not an easy task. If it was, then any team could do it. I think it's good for the league because it finally gets Juventus not winning a championship, you know, 9 times in a row, 10 times potentially. It was getting a bit embarrassing and a bad look for the league. It's good in that aspect, but obviously, yeah, I mean, it took them also to get knocked out in the group stage of the Champions League to up their consistency. I have to make that as a note. So take anything that, in fact, in the Milan fans will say with a pinch of salt that if they had this form in the Champions League that they'd be in the final, that's a joke. They haven't got the squad to compete on three fronts like that. You know what, just fair play to them, and we'll see if this can continue next year when, yeah, they've registered a lot of debt and they might have to sell some players. But yeah, fair play to them.
Yeah, I've got a feeling. I've just got a feeling in the back of my mind, and I don't know if I want it to happen or not, because I think it could be really bad if it happens. But they're struggling to pay players. They're going to have to sell some players to raise funds because they need 250 million by the sounds of it. Either that or they're at the point now where they're going to end up signing up for a really high interest loan with some random investment fund. And it's just not good. It's not good. They've potentially got a squad of players that they can't afford to have, and they've won the Scudetto with a squad that they can't afford to have. So that might be tainted moving forward. But yeah, without a doubt, they've earned the title. Final question then. Kenneth Jensen asks, do you think that the interest of the Singer family and Elliott management in Milan's project has faltered a bit now the European Super League won't happen?
Yeah, I've never. That's a good question.
It is a good question. I wanted to make sure that we asked it, and if I'd have seen it earlier, I'd have put it forward so we had some time to think. I would first and say that I think that the answer should be no, and we all hope that it's no, but if this was all part of the plan of getting Gazidis and letting him have complete authority over the, you know, the main decisions to do with the club from both a commercial and a sporting aspect, and you're bypassing figures like Boban before and Maldini now to do that and to sort of implement some kind of vision, it doesn't look great. The answer, I guess, is we have to wait and see. This is a big summer transfer window for us, especially if we get back into the top four. Fans will expect for this summer transfer window to show that the owners back their project, their own project, back the people in charge of it, and they actually want to deliver on their promise of getting Milan back to being one of Europe's top clubs in the medium term. If they don't, if we're scrimping around for loans from Torino and we're getting players with options to buy and we're struggling to sell Deadwood and there doesn't seem to be much progression, then people will question it and say, you didn't put your money where your mouth was, you know. Everything's going well in terms of our five-year plan or however long it is. And, you know, one bad summer means that you could stagnate. So I think it'd be a very interesting summer, and that's where we might find out what the true intentions are of our owners.
Good question, good answer.
Yeah, I would like to think that it does not deter them from wanting to own the club. That's what my heart says, but my brain says, don't be a fool. They're Americans and they're greedy and they're a vulture fund. And they probably bought the club and then found out about the European Super League and they're like, fuck yeah, 350 million a year, all over it.
I just love that. Don't be stupid. They're American. It says Mabel. Be American.
It's true.
Just technology.
Dude, we're like fucking capitalism 101 over here, dude. Like, you know.
Yeah.
I was explaining it to my family yesterday, and I was like, yeah, of the 15 teams, 15 or half of them are owned by Americans, and Americans ruin sports. And that's what they tried to do.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? True. And I was like, never mind.
Mm-hmm. How long have you got?
Yeah, right.
But yeah. I think I'd spot on with Maddie on that one. I feel like we can't be naive that this might be going through their heads because, you know, it's the same model that they wanted to sort of get us down and American sports are made of. I hope not. I feel like a lot of it does ride on how we progress. And obviously, if we can get a top four finish and get money coming in and flowing, and the model is seen to be improving and improving the image, to they're going to potentially sell anyway. They are going. It was always going to happen.
Right.
So will this speed things up? Might, maybe. I mean, also, yeah, it just depends on how we finish. I don't think they're not the owners for the long haul. I think no fan can kid themselves about that. But as long as they're here and clearing our debts and helping out with transfer campaigns and allowing the project to get better and the image of the club to get better, then, you know, then fair enough. Bring it. Let them stay.
They've almost been like, oh God, this might get some bad comments. They've almost been like the Pioli of owners coming to the club that's in a crisis, and they've nursed it and they've put a lot of love and resources into it to build it back up, which they didn't have to do. But there may come a time when we see some limitations. That's all I'll say. I just hope.
Good thing Gian's not here.
Cry. Is it called out the fact that we've?
Does that make Boban Haig? By the way, I don't know.
You'd have already been fuming about the fact we've gone beyond an hour. So anyway, if you made it this far, what I will say, thank you very much, and just. Let us know if you like us going a bit longer. I know Maddie doesn't, but you know, he's overruled by majority here. It's good fun.
We're throwing him under the bus.
Like I say, if you have made it this far, then thank you very much. And drop a like and subscribe and turn on notifications if you haven't already. Stefano's got a video coming in a few days, which will be, I believe, all around the Donnarumma saga. Don't miss that. That's going to be a cracker. But in the meantime, I've been your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. It's on the screen, joined by Madison.
Yeah. Next week, we should have the gang back together. Follow me on Twitter at Edward_Toth.
And Stefano, thank you very much for joining us again.
Yeah, of course, guys. Yeah, I know I'm not a steady make of this and always come to the gang. I love watching the usual four do the videos, and I love to just join you guys as well whenever there's a space. So yeah, if you haven't already, follow me on Twitter, keep an eye peeled for the midweek videos that we do. Until next time, guys.
Thank you very much for listening, everybody, and we will catch you in a week's time, hopefully with a win over Juve in the back. Thank you.
Bella palla per Rebic, Ibra, Rebic, 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 il tiro. Goal!